भद्रं कर्णेभिः शृणुयाम देवाः भद्रं पश्यमाक्षभिर्यजत्राः स्थिरैरङ्गैस्तुष्टुवागुंसस्तनुभिः व्यशेम देवहितं यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्ध्रश्रवाः स्वस्ति नः पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्तार्क्ष्यो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्दधातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। Let us listen to auspicious things through our ears. Let us perceive auspicious things and divinity in others through our eyes. Let us speak truth. Let our body and mind be engaged in disciplining ourselves, oriented towards the goal of self-realization. May the blessings of God and all the masters be upon us all. Om, Amen. I bow to one God who is formless, omnipresent. I bow to all the masters and all the saints and sages of all religions. And I bow to each one of you. You are the living presence of divinity. Good evening and welcome to this forum. I'm happy to see all of you here, sincere seeker of truth. We are thankful to God and all the masters for all their wisdom they have given to us. When you look at this beautiful creation, have you ever wondered how this beautiful creation came into existence? Who created it? When we look at the sprout, just few minutes ago we were talking about some gardening. When we plant a seed, there's a sprout. And when we look at this sprout, we see that there is a little leaf, and slowly more green leaves are coming up. And on the leaves, then we find red or yellow flowers. Then comes sweet fruits, maybe mango, maybe pears. If we look at the ground, if we look at the water, neither the ground nor the water has any fragrance, but flowers have fragrance. Neither ground nor water nor even the compost has sweetness, but the fruit is sweet. Any fruit, it is sweet. Who is putting sweet or who is putting sugar in the fruit? Who is putting fragrance in the flower? Everything is in a definite order in this beautiful creation of God. If you look at the fish, fish has a suction pump to breathe inside the water. If you go to some cold place like Alaska, the animals there, they have fur on their body so that they can protect themselves against the cold. If you look at the sun, there's a definite time for sunrise, and sun is setting at a particular time. Sun is moving around the earth. The moon is also in its orbit. Stars and planets, everything is in a very definite order. Who has created this beautiful creation? Then question comes, surely there is a creator. If there is creation, there must be a creator. And this creator we call Almighty God, Supreme Reality, many names. This creation is creation of God. It is creation, and you can say it is a dream of God. And naturally this question comes, and who is God? Where does he live? What does he do? And how to know God? There was a king in ancient India, and he had all these questions. So he asked his minister as well as many wise people in his council, and he was asking these questions. So people try to give answers in their own way, with their own understanding, even quoting many scriptures. They tried to explain. But king was never satisfied. There's something more to know. All knowledge seems to be theoretical knowledge. So one day he called his chief minister and he said that, I want to know these answers. And then he said that, I have listened to so many people, but I am still not satisfied. So if you cannot give these answers, then you'll be fired. The minister was in trouble. He tried his best, but what to do if king is not satisfied? So minister was unhappy. He came back home with long face, and naturally, when he was not happy, so his wife asked, what is the reason? He told, this has happened. But wife also couldn't say anything, because these are the philosophical questions and need more, much better explanation. But this chief minister, he had one cook. This cook had never gone to school. And cook said, sir, if you don't mind, I can go with you and I can answer these questions to king. First, chief minister didn't believe that one who did not go to school even, how could he answer these questions, highly philosophical questions? He said, trust me, I'll try to help you out. There was no way, so minister allowed him. Next day, cook went to the palace, and then he asked the king to bring few articles. He said that, O revered king, I need a lamp and a black cow, a matchbox, and also some green grass. And also, please bring your person who is taking care of cows in the cowshed. So this person also came. Now, cook asked the king, what are your questions? So king posed all these questions. He asked, who is God? Where does he live? What does he do? And how to know God? And there were many other questions, but these were the main questions. So cook said that, if you want to learn from me, so surely I'm your teacher, I'm your guru. And you are my student. He said, yes, at this moment I'm your student. So he said that guru has to sit on the higher place and student has to sit on the floor, because student has to be humble. He said, yes. So king offered his throne to his guru. Now this cook is sitting on the throne. And king, with humility, sat down on the floor. Then cook asked this milkman to milk. First he said that you can feed the cow some grass. Tender green grass was fed to cow. Then he asked milkman to milk the cow. There was milk in a pot collected. After that, he ordered one of the attendant that, please, with this matchbox, please light the lamp. So lamp was there. Now he asked, this cook asked the king, sir, your first question is, who is God? He said that, you see, you fed green grass to cow. The cow, color of cow is black, but what is the color of milk? It is pure white. He said that the power which converts green color of grass in a black cow in white milk is God. So one who converts this or transforms this, he is the God, so he is the power. Then he said, second question is, where does God live? Or what does he do? So where is God? He said, if you look at this lamp, where is the light of this lamp? He said, it is in the entire room. He said, similarly, God is omnipresent. Although you see the lamp at one place, but you see the light all around the lamp as well as in the entire room. So is the presence of God, who is all-pervading. Then he said, which direction God faces? He said, you can go to one corner and see which direction lamp is facing. So king went in all the direction, and from all direction he saw that lamp is towards him. So he said that God is everywhere. So he is facing every direction. Whichever direction you are facing God. Then next question, he said, what does he do? He said that, look, I am a cook. I never went to school, and you are the king of this country. So where is your place? You are on the throne. But I am sitting on the throne, and you are sitting on the floor, like a humble student. So God makes you to sit there, and he makes me to sit here. So this is his drama, and that is what he is doing. However, so this was the question, and this was the answer by the cook. Theoretical knowledge is not enough to know God. And how to know God? Cook said that in the milk, is there any butter or not? King said, yes, there is butter, because when we churn, butter is there, but it is invisible. When we churn the milk, then this butter is floating up and we collect it. Similarly, God is everywhere, God is within, God is without, but we have to churn ourselves. Meaning is that we have to go within, we have to meditate, and then we experience divinity. So divinity is all-pervading, God is omnipresent. This is the topic for today. So we'll discuss something about this topic, and at the end, we'll have an open session for questions and answers. All-pervading divinity, this beautiful concept is very clearly mentioned in many of the Upanishads. If you read the Taittiriya Upanishad in the second canto, sixth chapter, first mantra, there is a beautiful description of creation, that how God created everything. First, the five gross elements, then the vegetable, then the plants, after that, animals, aquatics, and at the end, human being. So it's there's a process of creation systematically. Even in the Holy Bible, in the Genesis, there's a beautiful description of creation coming into existence. So Taittiriya Upanishad mantra says, Tat Srashtva Tadeva Anupravishat. Having created everything, God entered into his very creation. So he became all-pervading. And this is more elaborately discussed in the first mantra of Isha Upanishad, where Rishi, a sage, who meditated deeply, and in his state of deep meditation, he received this wisdom, which he put in this mantra, Om Isha Vasyam Idam Sarvam Yatkincha Jagatyam Jagat Tena Tyaktena Bhunjitha Ma Gradha Kasyat Vidhanam. This is a very beautiful mantra which explains the concept of divinity. In the very ancient time, Isha Upanishad is the first Upanishad. And this explains this broad vision about divinity. Isha Vasyam Idam Sarvam. There are four lines, so you can see that each line is having a particular message for us. So it has four parts. So what is the meaning of this mantra? The general or literal meaning of this mantra is, whatever is existing in this universe, whether it is animate or inanimate, moving or non-moving, everything is covered or pervaded by the power of God. My master, Baba Hariharananji, he used to say there is nothing which is non-God. Everything is presence of God. Wherever you see God only. And the second line says, Tena Tektena Bhunjitha. So this world is given to you, enjoy everything, but with an idea of renunciation, idea of detachment, because nothing belongs to you. Do not covet for wealth of others. Ma gradha kasya svidhanam. Do not covet for wealth of others. So if we go by word meaning, it begins from Om. So Om represents God the Absolute, all-pervading divinity. Ishavasyam. If we see this first word, Ishavasyam, what is Isha? Isha or Isha means God. Also, it means Lord. And we can split this word in Sanskrit, Isha. So there are two syllables, E and Sha. E is called Shakti Dayaka, means E represents the energy. So E is energy, and Sha means tolerance or happiness. So Isha means the Lord or Master. From this word Isha, Ishvara has come. Ishvara, so Isha, the Lord, and Vara. Another word, what is Vara? Vara means supreme, the great, the adorable. So what is the real meaning of Ishvara? Ishvara means the supreme Lord, the great master who rules with the help of inherent strength, which is Shakti, and as a symbol of tolerance and happiness. In Vedanta, we call Ishvara and Jiva. So Jiva is individual being, Ishvara is God. So in Vedanta, we say Ishvara means universe associated with Maya, or this cosmic illusive force, is known as Ishvara. So according to Vedanta, Ishvara is the supreme ruler of this universe. He is the creator, he is the sustainer, and he is the dissolver. But there is another word in most of the Upanishads, you will find Brahman. And Brahman represents transcendental reality. Brahman is beyond all attributes, whereas Ishvara is with attribute, because he is creating, he is maintaining the creation, and he is also dissolving. So he has some attributes, some qualities. But Brahman is supreme reality, transcendental reality, beyond triple actions, beyond all attributes. So this mantra says, Ishavasam idam sarvam. Whatever we see, Vasyam, what is Vasyam? It has come from Sanskrit root verb Vasa. Vasa means indwelling. Vasa means also remaining. Vasa means also cloth. Or you can say enveloping or pervading. So there are many meanings, and each meaning is applicable to this mantra. Idam sarvam. Idam means this. And sarvam means all. Sarvam means also sense organs. So in one way we can say that whatever we see or perceive through the sense organs in this universe, it is all pervaded by divinity, power of God. In another interpretation we can say that how these sense organs are functioning? Because of power of God. So who is seeing? When we say I see, who is seeing through the eyes? It is power of God. If there is no power of God, we cannot see even if eyes are there. A dead body cannot see. How we are talking? Even mouth is there, tongue is there, but dead body cannot speak. So if there is no power of God in any of the sense organs, we cannot do any function. And because of power of God, everything is alive, beautiful, in this creation. Unfortunately, we do not realize it. Because our body, mind, and intellect, they cannot function of their own. They are just inert matter without power of God. So Isha Vasyam Idam Sarvam, then second part, Yat Kim Cha Jagatyam Jagat. Yat Kim Cha means, Cha means and, Yat Kim whatever. Whatever it consists of all. It doesn't leave anything inanimate, animate, moving, non-moving. You can cover everything in whatever word. Yat Kim Cha Jagatyam means in the universe. Jagat means the universe, moving universe. So everything is pervaded by God. God is present in each and every particle. Yat Kim Cha Jagatyam Jagat means in this universe, whatever is existing, as well as in the moving universe also. So God is in the universe and God is also in every particle of the universe. Jagat, this word is also very interesting. Jagat means which is constantly changing. Whatever we see which is changeable is part of Jagat. Our body is changing every moment. It is growing, going through six modifications. Then our mind is changing. Our thoughts are changing. For example, you are sitting now, you are thinking something, next moment you have another thought. Maybe you are in India, thousands of miles away. Your emotions are changing and even your relationships are changing. So everything which is changing, it's part of Jagat. Jagat means that which is constantly undergoing change. So it says, everything which is existing in this universe is pervaded or covered by the power of God. God is omnipresent. Once, Guru Nanak, he is from Sikh religion, the guru of Sikh religion. Once he went to holy pilgrimage to Mecca. And when he reached near Mecca, he was feeling tired. So he just took a rest under the shade of a tree. Extending his feet, one person came and he saw that Guru Nanak was facing the legs or keeping the legs in the direction of the holy shrine, which is considered as the disrespect to God. So he asked humbly Guru Nanak that, sir, your feet are facing the holy shrine and it is disrespect. So Guru Nanak said that I am really tired and I cannot move my legs. If you would help me, that would be great. Can you please move my legs in another direction? He said, yes, I will. This person took the holding the feet of Guru Nanak and keeping in another direction, and he found that the shrine moved in that direction. He tried in another direction, and each time he found that the shrine was moving in the direction where the feet of Guru Nanak were facing. Isn't it amazing? Which shows practically that God is omnipresent where He is not. Many people believe that Hindus worship idols, because a lot of people are not clear about that. They think that there is some icon, some idols in the temple, so they worship. Hindus worship idol. They are idol worshiper. But it is not really true, because Hindus do not worship any idol, but they worship God only in that idol. And this idol or icon is a chosen symbol. For example, there is a symbol Om. It is just a symbol which denotes supreme reality. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said, 8th chapter, Om iti ekaksharam brahma. This symbol Om, which is imperishable, it represents God, the absolute Brahman. It is just like when we study in schools, so we have studied chemistry. When we were writing some equation, and when we write water, so instead of water, we wrote H2O. That means two molecules of hydrogen combining with one molecule of oxygen, that is water. And whenever we were writing or looking at this word H2O, We knew that what it represents. We immediately thought of water. Similarly, any idol, any icon, it is just a symbol to represent all-pervading divinity. And that is why Ishvara or God is worshipped in many names and forms, even in trees, in the stone, in the mountain, in the river, in the animals. Because if you go to India, you will find many objects which people worship. And why they worship? Again, it is not they worship animals, they do not worship snake, they do not worship the mountain, but they see, they worship the same all-pervading divinity in them. And this is the best concept. You know that Hindus, they not only they believe the omnipresence of God, but they practice omnipresence of God. And that is why they worship each and every object, but they worship the same divinity in that. And this is the broad concept of all-pervading divinity. We do not limit the God in just a room or in a particular place. But for us, means as a human being, being the children of God, we should feel omnipresence of God. God is everywhere, this is the mantra says, and this is the concept, this is the idea Rishi, the sage, has given to us in the ancient time, and we have been practicing it, perceiving, feeling presence of God, and worshipping in many names and forms, but the same reality. There's another misconception that people worship in form and formless. Again, it is the same concept. God, who is infinite, he can take many forms. One who is infinite can take infinite path, can take infinite forms, and he can manifest in any form. So it does not matter. And for that reason, some people worship God as personal God and some as impersonal God. There are some people who hold this idea that God is sitting in the heaven and he created everything. So if we look at that concept, that means God is limited to heaven only. So whatever is in this world or universe, it is devoid of divinity. But that is not the truth, because this mantra says the creation is not different from God. Whatever is existing, it is nothing but power of God. It is his presence. And also, Hindus do not worship many God, because sometime somebody asked me a question that there are 3.3 million deities in Hinduism. I said, can you please tell me the name? If you go on just calculating, you cannot reach this number. This number you cannot reach, because maybe you can go to 100, 200, maybe, not more than that. So where this concept came from, 3.3 million? You know, this is again a symbol, it is a metaphor. When this statement came from the Veda that there are 3.3 million deities in Hinduism, there are two ways. In Sanskrit, there is a word which is known as koti. 33 koti. This is the word, 33 koti, devi devata. That means koti, this word in Sanskrit has two meanings. One meaning is the crores. You can say 10 millions. And here, the koti also means the category. For example, there are different categories of departments or categories of people, that these people will take care of administration, these people will take care of accounts, these people will take care of the purchase and so on. So these are the different categories. So there were 33 departments or categories when God created. In order to run this creation in order, he created certain departments like that. And each department, each section was governed by a particular aspect of divinity, and that's how there were 33 koti. But if it is translated literally, it becomes 3.3 million, which doesn't make sense. And now another thing, when this statement came from the scripture, at that time, the total population of the world was 3.3 million. So each person was living like God, moving like God. It was in the period of truth. So there were 3.3 deities, and as we all are children of God, so there is no contradiction in this statement. However, so people say that there are so many deity is so many forms in Hinduism. But remember, they invoke the one formless God in various names and forms, because each aspect of divinity become a deity. You know, in Vedanta, if you read the Tattva Bodh by Adi Shankara, you'll find the description that each part of our body has a presiding deity in the body. For example, nose is governed, the presiding deity of nose is Lord Ganesha, presiding deity of hands are Indra, presiding deity of feet is Lord Vishnu, and so on. So each sense organ is presided over by one aspect of divinity. So we can go on in, again, same thing, that everything is pervaded by power of God. Who is giving power to the sense organs to function? It is also by God. And if you read the Shweta Shwetar Upanishad, there is a mantra which also explains about this concept of all-pervading divinity. It is in the 6th chapter, 11th mantra. Eko devah sarvabhuteshu gudha karmadhyakshah sarvavyapi sarvabhutantaratma karmadhyaksha sarvabhutadi vasah sakshi cheta kevalo nirgunascha. So there are some attributes. Eko devah, the real meaning is eko devah means ek, eko means ek. Devah is again for God. This word devah, it has come from Sanskrit, and the etymological meaning of this word deva is dyotan shilatvat sah devah. That which illuminates is known as deva, or other meaning is divine being for deva. So one God is hiding in every living being. Sarva bhuteshu gudha. Gudha means hidden. And sarva vyapi, he is all pervading. He is everywhere. Sarva bhutantaratma, bhuta antaratma. So atma is the soul, and he is the soul in all. And that is known as atma. Karmadhyaksha, he is helping, enabling each one of us to do the work. Who is doing the work? Dead body cannot work. So who is the giving power to work, to our hands? It is again God. So he is karmadhyaksha. He is supervising our actions. He is giving power to do action. Sarvabhutadi vasah. And he is remaining in each one of us. Sakshi. He is Sakshi. Sakshi means witness. He is there. He is hidden within us. But he is Sakshi. He is just witnessing. He is not involved in any of our action. But he is watching everything. So he is Sakshi. Cheta. Cheta, it has come from Chit. Means pure consciousness. He is consciousness. And Kevalo, he is the only one. Only one. There is no second. God is only one. There is not. There are not two gods. And Nirguna. Nirguna means without any attribute. Guna means qualities. Guna means attribute. And he is formless. Nirgunascha. So he is the same God who is hiding within us. You know, there is a very beautiful monk who came to Chicago in 1893, Swami Vivekananda, and who brought the message of Vedanta to the Western Hemisphere. So one day, Swami Vivekananda, he visited a king, because he was invited by many kings to stay and give talks and help them. And so one day he was staying in the palace, and this king was criticizing many people. He didn't believe in worship of many gods by the Hindus or other people. So he used to criticize them, that what is there in this icon, what is in the idol. So Swami Vivekananda one day was moving with the king in the palace, and he stood at one place. There was a big portrait of king's father on the wall. So he asked the minister that, sir, take down this portrait. And minister said, what? He was surprised. Then he said that, take this down and spit on it. And the minister was bewildered and the king was angry. And Vivekananda ji said that this is just a piece of canvas with some paint on it. King was really upset. So Swami Vivekananda ji asked king, why are you so angry? He said that, don't you realize that you are disrespecting my father as well as you are disrespecting me? You don't have right to do that. And Swami Vivekananda ji said, but what is there? It is just a piece of canvas with some paint on it. What's wrong? He said that, don't you realize that when I look at this photo, this portrait, I remember my father. It reminds me that how much I love him. So Swami Vivekananda ji said that, it is the same thing. When people look at the idol or any icon, even at the picture of God, so they feel love for God and they feel the presence of God as you are feeling presence of your father in this canvas. So this is how he proved his point. Then going back to this mantra of Ishopanishad, the third part, Tena Tyaktena Bhunjitha. This is also very interesting. Tena means by him. He means by God. Tyaktena means it has come from Tyakta. By renouncing or by abandoning. Bhunjitha. Bhunjitha, it has come from Sanskrit root word bhuj. Bhuj means to enjoy. So bhunjitha means enjoy. So the meaning is that Tena Tyaktena Bhunjitha. Tena tyaktena, in one way we can say that whatever is left by God, tyaktena, whatever is left by God, you should enjoy it. That means offer everything which is given to you to God. That, okay, God, oh God, you gave me the eyes, so it is your eyes. You gave me food, I'm offering food to you. You gave me breath, so this breath is your breath, I'm offering every breath to you, remembering you. So whatever is left by God, offer it to God and take it as a prasad. Prasad means His grace or consecrated food. In other words, we can say that through renunciation or through detachment of ego, desires, even our body consciousness, we have to renounce it. And then we should enjoy this world. When we meditate, in meditation we ask our student, or we are supposed to renounce our body consciousness. In meditation, we are supposed to renounce our thoughts, even our perceptions. We have to go beyond. We have to renounce our ideas, thoughts, and go beyond. So this is tena tyaktena, and then bhunjitha, then you enjoy the presence of God. In meditation, when you go deeper, deeper, when you renounce everything, you renounce your thoughts, your feelings, and your all body consciousness, then you enjoy the supreme power of God in the form of peace and bliss. So tena tyaktena, then bhunjitha. First you renounce these things. It doesn't mean that you have to go away from that, but keep the attitude of renunciation, detachment, and then you enjoy whatever is given by God. And this is the teaching, you can say, the third part, tena tyaktena bhunjitha. It's a teaching which tells us to follow the path of action, not the path of escapism. Remember, spirituality is not to escape. It is to do rightful action, be here in this world. Because look, the beauty of this mantra. The rishi or sage is not telling that if you want to know God, if you want to experience divinity, you leave everything. You renounce everything, go to forest and meditate. He's not telling that. While he is telling, tena tyaktena bhunjitha, he's telling enjoy. But how to enjoy? With an idea of renunciation. What is that idea of renunciation? Why he is telling? Because the next part of this mantra is Ma gradha kasya svidhanam. Ma means not or do not. Gradha means covet. Kasya svid. Kasya svid means whose or anybody's. Dhanam means wealth. You enjoy everything. Living in this world, don't go away from the world, but be here in this world and feel the presence of God and enjoy His beauty and love everything, in everything and everywhere. So this is Why? Because Magradha Kasyas Vidhanam, whose wealth it is? Whose wealth it is? And don't covet for wealth of others. So there are two teachings in this. Whose wealth it is means it is not your wealth. It does not belong to you. Whatever is given, it does not belong to you, it belongs to God. So if it belongs to God, what is yours? So why should you be attached or you should be egotistic? It doesn't belong to you at all. You know, this word, Kasyas Vidhanam, it doesn't belong to you. You may say, Swamiji, how can you say that it doesn't belong to you? I have a body and it belongs to me. How can you say that body doesn't belong to me? Yes, body doesn't belong to you. Because it belongs to you, if it is your body, then it should follow your commands. It should obey your command. It should not become sick. It should not become old. But it is constantly changing, undergoing all modifications. Even the hair, if you see me, the hairs are becoming gray. Even the hair does not belong to me, because if it belongs to me, then I should say, I can tell the hair, be careful, don't become gray. But it is not following, because it doesn't belong to me. So everything belongs to God. Ma gradha, this word gradha, the not to covet. Gradha means do not desire to possess more and more. You know, the human being have a tendency to collect more and more than the need. And it becomes greed. Whatever we need, it is given by God. We are provided with. But if we start collecting more or hoarding more than that which we need, it becomes greed. So there is a subtle difference. So covet, gradha means not to covet for wealth of others. Whatever is needed for you, it is given by God. You should be content. This is the teaching of contentment. Then this word gradha also has relation with gradha. Gradha means the vulture. If you look at the vulture, it flies very high in the sky. But it is always looking down for the dead body. And that is what sometimes we behave like. Means high ideals, but where are our look? Where are our eyes? We look at the negatives, we look at the dirty things, which we are not supposed to do. We are supposed to look at divinity. Although we are flying high like vulture, so this is gradha, the vulture. So not to covet for wealth of others. Really nothing belongs to us. You know, sometimes some disciple requests us as a monk, Swamiji, we have purchased a new house. Can you please come and bless the house? So that's fine. So once a monk was invited by a disciple because he purchased a flat, and this flat was in a high-rise building. It was existing on the fourth floor. So the monk visited and he saw a very nice flat. Then monk asked him that, sir, who owns the land? So disciple said that nobody owns the land. The monk asked that, how is it possible you don't own the land and you own the flat? How is it possible? He said that, Swamiji, don't ask me many questions. I own the flat. Well, so monk asked that, what is that you own in this flat? He said that, this flat is mine. Then monk asked that, does this floor belong to you? You own the floor? He said, yes, the floor is mine. The Swami said that, but this floor is the ceiling of the person living down below. He said, yes, it is true. The floor is the ceiling for the person living down below on the third floor. And other day, when my wife was pounding something, that person came up and started kicking the arrows. Do you think this is your ancestral property? So it doesn't belong to me. Then the ceiling, you own the ceiling? Yes, ceiling is mine. But ceiling is also the floor of the person living above. And the left wall of your flat is the right wall of your left neighbor. And the right wall of your flat is the left wall of your right neighbor. Then he asked that, what do you belong? So this everything is belong. You say that it belongs to you, but what really belongs to you in this flat? This is our condition, that we have come to this world and we said it belongs to me, but what really belongs to me? So if everything belongs to God, whose wealth it is? It is wealth of God. So if it is wealth of God, how should I use it? You can imagine that if you live your life intelligently and you appreciate that you do not own a single thing in this world, you are only a managing trustee. Because in the office, you are managers, you are a bank manager, you are managing the accounts, you are managing the money. But do you think that money belongs to you? If you think that, you will be in trouble. You are just a managing trustee, and even if you have money, you can eat only stomachful. You cannot eat more than that. So don't covet for the wealth of others. So you should be a good managing trustee. And if someone has money, he or she has to manage it. You cannot say that I don't want to manage. You have to manage. So God has given you this body. You have to manage the body. God has given you this world. You have to manage this world intelligently without getting attached to this world. It is like when you join a new office. So in the office, you are given a nice table, a chair, telephone, laptop, maybe computer, and many other office helps. Why? To work efficiently for your employer and for your own use. But if you think that this is a nice laptop, I should take it my home. If you do that, what will happen to you? You will be in trouble. Similarly, everything in this universe is given by God, and we should make the best use of it. So, Isha Vasam Idam Sarvam Yat Kincha Jagatyam Jagat. Whatever is moving, non-moving, is existing in this universe, as well as this whole universe, moving universe itself, it is pervaded by the power of God. And we should live with the idea of detachment, that I am not the owner of this world, but I am a managing trustee. I am appointed by God to make the best use of it and enjoy this world. Enjoy everything with the attitude that there is presence of God everywhere in each and everything. Because whose wealth it is? Everything belongs to God. Regarding the omnipresence of God, there is also description in Bhagavad Gita. It is in the chapter 13, verse number 13. And the same mantra is in Shweta Shwetar Upanishad. It is in third chapter, 16th mantra. Sarvatah Pani Padam Tat Sarvato Akshi Shiromukham Sarvata Shrutimal Loke Sarvam Avratya Tishthati. It is about the power of God, that Sarvata Pani Padam. Pani means the hands, Pada means feet, Sarvata means everywhere. Tat means that, which represents God the Absolute. Sarvato Akshi. Akshi means eyes, Shiro means head, Mukham means face. Sarvata Shruti. Shrutimal Loke. Shruti means the hearing, the ears. Sarvam avratya, again the same concept, sarvam avratya. Avratya means covered by. So everything is covered by power of God. So tishtati, the literal meaning is with hands and feet everywhere, eyes, head and face everywhere, ears everywhere, he is remaining in the world and covering everything. God the Absolute. So where is the place where God is not present? He is everywhere. He is within, he is without. And in the Holy Quran, it is written, God is in the east, God is in the west, God is in the north, God is in the south, God is above, God is below. So everywhere it is presence of God. And if you read the Bhagavad Gita in the 11th chapter, when Arjuna is praying to Lord Krishna in the battlefield, after seeing his cosmic form, Arjuna is praying and he is telling, I bow to you again and again from all directions, from above, from below, from front and back, from the right and left. Namo namastu sahasrakatva punashya bhuyopi namo namaste namah purastat atha prashtataste namostute sarvateva sarva. Because he felt the omnipresence of God. So God is infinite, and He is dwelling in the heart of every living being. Since the infinity means you cannot express, can you express infinity? It is beyond words, it is inexplicable. So God is infinite, and this is the Vedic concept, that God is covering everything, He is pervading everything in this universe. The similar concept in Veda we find in Rig Veda, there is a mantra, Satyam Ekam Vipra Bahudha Vadanti. Here the God is addressed as truth, Satyam. So truth is one, God is one, but Vipra means wise people, they speak in many ways. So that means they interpret in many ways. The same God who is omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient, He is all-pervading, but wise people, they interpret in many ways. They try to give many attributes and explain. So truth is one, but wise men call it by various names and forms. And it is like the teachings in the Dhyana Bindu Upanishad. There is a mantra which explains that how divinity is present in everything. In this mantra it is said, Pushpa Madhya Yatha Gandhaha. If you look at the flower, there is fragrance in the flower. And I think you will find no flower which has no fragrance. More or less every flower has some fragrance. So as the aroma or fragrance is in the flower, Payo Madhya Yatha Ghritam, as the butter is present in the milk, Til Madhya Yatha Tailam, if you take sesame seed, there is oil in each seed, but you cannot see it, it is invisible. Pashaneshviva Kanchanam, and just like in the stone there is gold, Evam Sarvam, Evam Sarvani Bhutani, Mano Sutram Iv Atmani, meaning is that, so also in every living being, the soul is remaining hidden, which is invisible like butter in the milk. And it is like a thread in the rosary of gems. Sthir buddhi rasam muhudo. So those who have attained peace through meditation, and those who are not dull-minded, only they can experience divinity, brahmavit, brahmani sthitaha. And only those who have gone beyond ignorance, or who have cut the wheel of ignorance, they can only experience divinity, that the highest truth, that I am Brahman, aham brahmasmi. And for that, just like if you see the milk, you cannot see butter unless you churn it. If you do not grind the sesame seed, you cannot get oil. When you want to make perfume, you have to extract it from the flower. Similarly, we have to churn our life, we have to meditate, and we have to practice some technique like we practice Kriya Yoga. So some meditation technique, and then you have to experience that all-pervading divinity which is hidden within you. And there is a beautiful mantra also in the Shweta Shwetara Upanishad, which is in the third chapter, 14th mantra, which speaks about the all-pervading divinity. Again, the same concept. Sahasra Shirsha Purushah, Sahasraksha Sahasrapat, Sa Bhumim Vishvato Vratva, Atyatishthat Dashangulam. Sahasra Shirsha means that all-pervading divinity or Supreme Almighty God, He has thousands of head, thousands of eyes, thousands of faces, thousands of feet, and Sa Bhumim means earth, Vishvato Vratva, He is covering the whole universe, including the earth. So there is no place where He is not. Atyatishthat Dashangulam, but that Supreme Almighty God is hiding in human body 10 fingers above. So we call it 10 fingers above the eyebrows. So if you measure from here, 4, 4 and 2, so that's the place of Sahasrara, we call it fontanelle. And from there, God is inhaling constantly breath of our life. So God is within us, God is without. We always say that God is omnipresent. We say, but we do not practice it. And how to practice? We have to contemplate on these beautiful teachings of the saints and sages and apply it into our life. Otherwise, it will be theoretical knowledge, which is not enough. It is said that Hari Reva Jagat, Jagate Ko Hari, Harito Jagato Nahi Bhinnatanu. That means God alone is universe, and universe alone is God. There is no distinction between the universe and God. God and God's creations are one. God's creation and God both are one, they are not different. If we say God is omnipresent, why can't we feel presence of God in this universe? If you look at, my master used to say, Baba Hariharananji, he said that when I look at the flower, I don't see flower, but I see presence of God. When I look at you, I don't look at you, I see the presence of God in you. And that is the state which we are supposed to get, and that is the goal of our life, because we are children of God. God is everywhere. Just by telling God is omnipresent, it is not giving us that realization. For that we have to meditate. We have to go within. We have to put these teachings into practice and feel the omnipresence of God. So, summarizing this mantra, whatever is existing, it includes everything. Animate, inanimate, moving, non-moving, jad or chetan, everything is pervaded, permeated by the power of God. You cannot say there is anything which is not God. So, this world is given to us. This world is beautiful, many colors, many experiences, sweet, sour, bitter. But it is the world we are living in. And in this world, we have to live with the idea of renunciation. And what to renounce? We have to renounce our ego. We have to renounce our ignorance. We have to renounce our body consciousness. And we have to go beyond. So with this type of attitude, we have to live. And at the same time, we should remember that this world is given to us. We are not the owner of this world. If we think that we are owner, then we'll be attached to it and we'll have ego and we will be in trouble. So live with this idea of detachment. It is given to me for my best use, for my attainment. If I have come to this world, God has sent me. So I have come here with a purpose to attain that purpose of life, to feel and realize divinity within. I have to use this world, but with the idea of detachment. And then also enjoy this world. Why to enjoy? Because God is everywhere. Can't we enjoy the beauty of God? Cannot we see the love of God? Can we not feel the presence of God? If we do not enjoy, then we live life like a depressed person. We are not supposed to be here with a long face. We have to smile. We have to feel with love of God. And that is what enjoying the beauty of God in every action, every breath, every particle of this world. And that is the highest goal of our life. Whatever we have, we should apply it towards the attainment of this goal as a means. This world is a means to attain the goal of life. It is not to renounce and run away from here. And these objects which are in this world, they are only means, so do not become attached to them. Remember, this world is not yours. This is given to you, and you should make the best use of it, because you are managing trustee. You are not the owner of this world, so you should not try to possess anything. And you cannot possess anything. If you want, you can try, but it slips away from your hand, whatever it is. And also, do not covet the wealth of others. Live the life of contentment. Enjoy this world with the idea of detachment, feeling the presence of God everywhere, in everything. And this is the teaching and concept of our sages about all-pervading divinity. So the purpose of life, to bring God into our life and feel His presence everywhere in this world, within us, without us, everywhere. Thank you all. I am praying to God for your peace and prosperity, for your self-realization. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kashchid Dukkha Bhag Bhavet Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. O God, let all become happy and healthy. Let everyone be kind, loving, noble, and generous. Let there be no sorrow. Let there be no suffering, no misery. Let there be more love, harmony, peace, prosperity, and better understanding everywhere. Om. Amen. Let the blessings of God and all the masters be upon us all. Thank you all.
Will you take some questions, Swami?
Please. Yes. So now we'll open the session for your questions. Please feel free to ask.
If anyone has a question, just please wait for the microphone so we can record the question as well as the answer. There is one already online that I will read out for you.
Please.
Well, this man must obviously speak Sanskrit. Pranam Swami Atmavidyanandaji. Thank you for a beautiful contemplative hour. Can you please say a few more lines on Ishvara and attributeless Brahman? And how do you experience the existence of latter when it is beyond everything, both subjective and objective realm?
Pranam and thank you for this beautiful question. We spoke about two terms from Vedanta. In the Veda, you will find that when we speak about God or when we read about God, there is no attribute really. Only one word is mentioned, which is Brahman. And it is said that Brahman is inexplicable. He is beyond attributes. He is infinite. He is formless. So really speaking, that which is infinite, that which is formless, that which is beyond the words, we cannot limit it into any word, but we can experience it. We cannot explain it, but we can experience it. But for our convenience, our saints and sages, they have tried to explain or give some idea. Actually, no one can explain God. It is like when you see the bulb in the refrigerator. And in many apparatus or equipments, electrical appliances, you see there is flow of electricity. But what electricity is? Can anybody explain that? It's beyond explanation. Yes, you can experience. Although you can see many forms, many manifestations of electricity in the various forms which we are using. Similarly, God, who is formless, is also manifested. So Brahman has taken many forms and shapes, and he is playing in this universe in many names and forms. So when the Brahman has come down to the level of Ishvara, because Ishvara means universe plus the attributes, or you can say Maya. In the Vedanta, we say Brahman and Maya. And in Sankhya philosophy, we say Purusha and Prakriti. But Brahman and Maya, Maya means this cosmic illusive force, or you can say the creative power of God is Maya. So when God is playing with his creative power Maya, then he becomes Ishvara. And when he is beyond attributes, which cannot be explained but experienced, only in deep state of meditation and samadhi, then he is Brahman. And when he is with attributes, now what are the attributes? There are many aspects. We say God is love, God is compassion. These are attributes. We say God is beautiful, so beauty is attribute. We say that God is very kind. It is an attribute. We say God is protector. It is an attribute. We say that God is in this form, in the idol of Lord Rama, or God is like Jesus. This is also attribute. So we can give any attribute as we want for our convenience, and that is what is the form. And through that form, we have to go to formless state. So that's one step more, one step beyond. So this is the concept of Brahman, and Brahman is beyond attributes. You cannot give any attribute. You cannot explain it. If you want to define God really, you are defiling God, because you cannot limit. God is infinite, and to experience infinite, you have to go to infinity. You have to become infinite. That is possible when you meditate. In meditation, your consciousness, which is finite or limited to your body only, it gets expanded up to infinite, and that's the place, that's the state where you feel oneness with God. Jesus said about it that I and my Father are one. That's the state when He is in complete union, which is we call yoga, union with God. So whatever we see in this world is Ishvara. And through that Ishvara, what we are experiencing? We are experiencing Brahman, God who is the Absolute. Thank you for your question.
Another question from the back here.
Thank you very much. It's actually not a question, but a comment. And I would like to know if you have heard about this before. Thank you for sharing this first shloka from the Isha Upanishad. I heard once that Mahatma Gandhi said that if the Upanishads disappeared, and if there was one shloka that was out to survive, that was that very one. So that was how powerful and meaningful it was. And I wonder if you know a little bit more about when Gandhi said this, if you have heard about it, because now I see, you know, the beauty of it a little bit more in depth, because I have read it, but, you know, never gone so deeply as you went today. Okay. So isn't that interesting that he said if all the Upanishads, the 108, were just wiped out, that very shloka would, you know, stay. Nothing was lost.
Thank you for your beautiful question. I do not remember when Mahatma Gandhi said this, but surely he said it. I know that he said it. And you are very correct that the essence of all Upanishads, the essence of all our teachings or all the wisdom is this mantra, Ishavasyam. Because this mantra does not speak about any particular religion. It doesn't speak about any form. It does not speak about anything which is needed to be done. But it is just that how you should live. There are two things. In this, because sage is giving the teaching that who is God, where He is, and how you should live in this world when you are here. So he has summed up or everything he has told in this mantra. And this is, as you know, Isha Upanishad is the first Upanishad. And this is the first mantra. Can you believe, can you imagine that thousands of years, maybe 9,000, 10,000 years ago, the saints and sages had this concept, had this idea of divinity, and today in this modern world, how we are living? We have divided ourselves. We have many divisions with caste, color, creed, religion, language, community, color, and so on. We have created so many boundaries, but look at these teachings, the wisdom which was given to us in the ancient time. It is very relevant today in our day-to-day life. If we can just think, contemplate on this beautiful teaching, which has no boundary, which is beyond all limitations, and that is what we need. So thank you for your comment also.
One more question, maybe our last one. Some scriptures say God is in the fontanelle, and some scriptures say God is in the heart. Are both things valid?
Thank you. Yes, both are valid statement. I would like to give more explanation. Some scriptures, they say God is in the fontanel. So those who follow the path of yoga, for them, God is in the fontanel. And those who follow the path of devotion, for them, God is in the heart. Now we need to understand what is real heart. What is the meaning of heart? In Sanskrit, heart is called hrdaya. There are three syllables, hr, da, and ya. Hr means to receive. Da means to give. And ya means that. So that which receives and gives is known as hrdaya or heart. So what is the function of heart? If physically, if you see, heart is collecting impure blood, then it is pumping back pure blood to different organs of the body. Heart is receiving oxygen and giving, it converting it, sending it carbon dioxide. So it is receiving and giving constantly. That's why it is known as hrdaya or heart. Now in the brain, brain is also receiving thoughts and it is emitting thoughts. Brain is receiving energy and it is also projecting energy in this cosmos. So for the yogis, this is also heart because it is also having the function of giving and receiving. So this is heart for the yogis in the fontanel, and for the devotees, heart is physical heart here. But both statements are correct. We discussed that Isha Vasyam Idam Sarvam, so every sense organ has the presence of God, whether you concentrate, you meditate in the fontanel, or you just feel the presence of God in the heart, you are in God. We are living in God, we are moving in God, we are just there. So both are correct. It depends on whichever attribute or whichever place you feel comfortable, you can choose. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you for your lecture. I just have a basic question. How does Hinduism address our tendency to forget the all-pervasiveness of God? Christians have the concept of sin. I was just wondering if there's a similar concept within Hinduism.
As Hinduism, we believe that we are children of God. So, a children of God is God. If you see the kitten always remembers that he's going to be a cat. The tiger cub is always a tiger. Momentarily, he or he may forget, momentarily. But again, the time comes. So, as a human being, it is our tendency to forget who we are. It doesn't matter whichever religion, but it is human tendency. Because of ignorance or maya, we forget. And for that reason, all the saints and sages, as our guru preceptors, in many forms, names, they come and they remind us. They tell us, no, this is your reality. Don't forget your identity. So in Hinduism, we believe that we are children of God. So that is our concept. And if we are children of God, then why should we worry? Mother has to worry about us. She will take care. So we have that attitude. And I think it is almost every religion has some concept about divinity that they think they are connected to God, they are God.
Well, if there are no further questions, there is one further question, very last question. Oops. Since God is everything and everywhere, he must also be negative things like hatred, sorrow, and murder. Why does he take these negative forms, and how are these reconciled with his greatness?
Have you seen a movie, especially Hindi movies? In Hindi movies, you will find there is a hero, there is also a villain. So there is a nice story that hero is put into trouble by the villain. Maybe he takes away the heroine, and then villain comes, and then hero has to jump up, and then he has to rescue the heroine. So that's how the story is built up. So in this universe, in this drama of God, because this creation, it is drama of God, it is dream of God, and this is drama. So in this drama, you have to have two forces. If everything becomes good, then it will not continue. Just think that if there is only day, will you be comfortable? If there is no night, when you will take rest? So night is also needed. Night represents darkness. You can say night represents all negatives. So it is also needed. To know the beauty of God or to continue this drama, both forces are required. But it is our duty to discriminate using our intellect or buddhi, what we have to accept and what we have to keep away from. That God has given to us. God has given that intellect, that power, that you can decide which is good for your spiritual growth and which is not good for you. But in this drama, both forces are needed. Otherwise, you cannot enjoy this drama.